Good job, Gabe. That singing was beautiful. Open your Bibles tonight to Genesis 42. We have been moving through rather slowly because we've had several other things that have been interspersed, but we've been moving through a study of the life of Joseph, and we have seen the incredible example of this young man in his faithfulness, no matter where he finds himself in life. We saw that he grew up in what today we would call a dysfunctional family. We saw how he remained faithful in the midst of adversity, being ripped from his family and sold into slavery, lied about, thrown into prison. He remained faithful. He remained faithful when he was elevated, placed second only to Pharaoh in the land and given power and prestige. And we talked about how it's often more difficult to remain faithful in prosperity even than when we're in adversity. And today we want to just look at a quality that he possessed, which is a remarkable quality for one who had been so severely injured. Joseph remained faithful when called upon to forgive. In Hebrews 10, we're warned about allowing a root of bitterness to grow up inside, and we probably have all experienced bitterness to some degree. I know those who go through divorce often are very bitter about the way things have turned out. A bad business deal can create bitterness. Grown children who neglect their parents can create bitterness. And the list goes on and on. God, though, has given us as Christians the ability to forgive. At times it seems impossible, but God has granted us the gift of being able to say, I forgive you, and releasing all that bitterness and all that poison that goes with it. Now, having said that, it is still a very, very difficult thing to do. Joseph is a model for us today because Joseph was faithful in this area of forgiveness. He was sold by his brothers. He was a slave. He was lied about, placed in prison, and then eventually came to the throne. And in Genesis chapter 42, we read the story of how when the famine finally came, Joseph had accurately interpreted Pharaoh's dream. The 7 years of plenty in which he had provided storehouses and the grain had been collected and Egypt was now sitting pretty with all of this stored grain, the famine throughout the land began to strike terror in the hearts of all the neighboring countries and the people. And it didn't take very long before one crop failure was enough to send many families over the edge. And so old Jacob, still living back in the land of Canaan, he sent his boys and he said, I want you to go to Egypt because I have heard that there in Egypt they have plenty of grain. Take some money with you and buy grain so that we can remain alive. And he sent those boys off, but he kept one at home. He says, I dare not risk the life of Benjamin. His beloved wife had given him two sons before her birth. In fact, Benjamin was born as she died during delivery. Joseph now in the mind of Jacob is gone forever, and he has this one boy born to his beloved wife, and he says, I can't let Benjamin go on the trip. He's got to stay home with me. So the other boys head off. The 10 go to Egypt, and they arrive, and they come in, and of all the people they could have met, they are ushered into the presence of Joseph himself. Now they begin to do obeisance and they bow before him, and immediately Joseph recognizes them. They begin to bow before him and he remembers that dream that he had so rashly bragged about before them that probably was part of why he got into such trouble with his brothers when he said, I dreamed that the moon and the stars and the sun all bowed before me, and I dreamed that your sheaves all bowed down to my sheaves. He recognized them, but they did not recognize him. He had learned to speak Egyptian fluently. He had begun to dress very differently. You see, most of the folks who were shepherds back in the land of Canaan in that period of time looked like a lot of folks today look like. Big beards, longer hair, and the Egyptians were not like that. Oh, you see pictures in the engravings and artwork of ancient Egypt. They were clean shaven, and they dressed in white linen, and they were a very clean people. In fact, they felt like most of the nations around them were detestable because of the way they dressed and the way they lived. In Egypt, they lived at the very highest level of society. And so Joseph had changed. I think that most of us recognize that a 17-year-old looks a little bit different from a 40-year-old. That's how many years had gone by. The last time they saw him, he was 17. Now he's 40 years old. And we all know that some strange things happen to our bodies in those intervening years between 17 and 40. I've been told that there are three stages of life. There's youth, there's middle age, and there's, you look great. Well, for most people, to be in a position like Joseph would have been a time for payback. He knew who they were. They had not recognized him. And for many people, they would begin planning how they would get even with those brothers who did such a terrible thing to him all those many years ago. You know, there are a lot of ways today people get even with folks and try to pay them back for injuries received. You can do it legally. You can sue someone for every penny they have. You can use money as leverage. Did you know that J. Paul Getty, once touted as the richest man in the world, he changed his will 21 times just in the last years of his life? You can get back at people verbally. You can do it with sarcasm. You can use a sharp tongue. You can even curse people. Or you can do it in a more subtle way. You can get even with someone with a cold shoulder, just ignoring them. You know, in marriages, a lot of times we don't want to fight physically, but the cold shoulder is often used. What's wrong? One partner asks. Oh, nothing, nothing. And the cold shoulder is employed until they have sufficiently been punished, and then things warm up again. But with Joseph, we don't even see one hint of retaliation. We don't see any attempts to make them pay for what they had done. Now, when you read this story, and we're going to just go through it as quickly as we can, we're going to do quite a bit of reading as we work through here. It does appear initially that Joseph is going to punish them for what they did. In fact, it almost looks like he's playing some kind of a cat and mouse game with them. But I don't believe that's the case. I think that Joseph was simply testing them to see their hearts and to see if they had experienced genuine sorrow for what they had done. I think he's wanting to see how they felt about his brother Benjamin. After all, they were so jealous of him, and Benjamin's his full-blood brother, and maybe they hate him like they hated Joseph. So he begins to test them here. And he wants to keep his identity a secret and puts them through a series of tests. I think in reality, Joseph shows both wisdom and restraint in the way he tries to decide whether his brothers have made any significant changes in their hearts. He does really to them, on a very small scale, what had happened in his own life. He gives them two tests. And these tests will reveal the hearts of men every time, the test of adversity and the test of prosperity. First of all, he gave them the test of adversity. They came in and they asked, and he immediately accused them of being spies. Now, he's doing all this through an interpreter. He will not speak Hebrew in their presence because he doesn't want to give his identity away. He can understand everything they're saying. And he accuses them of being spies, and they're denying that. And look in chapter 42, down in verse 12. "No," he said to them, "you have come to see where our land is unprotected." But they replied, "Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more." Joseph said to them, "It is just as I told you, you were spies. And this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother, and the rest of you will be kept in prison, so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies." And he put them all in custody for 3 days. I wonder if it was the very same prison where Joseph had wasted away those years after being falsely accused by Potiphar's wife. He locks them up in the prison for 3 days, and then he changes his request of them. In verse 18, it says, "On the third day, Joseph said to them, 'Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison while the rest of you go and take grain back to your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified, that you may not die.' And this they proceeded to do." He sends them back. He's going to just keep one brother. He wants to feed his father and his brother and the whole family, and so he prepares to send them back. But he wants to test them to see their hearts. Now, he's found out information already. They explained to him, not realizing he already knew all this, that there were once 12 brothers. They freely acknowledged that one of the brothers is no more. At least that's what they thought. They didn't know they were talking to him. So he then sends them back. And look down in verse 21 there of chapter 42. "They said to one another, 'Surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us.' And Reuben replied, 'Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood.' They did not realize that Joseph could understand them, since he was using an interpreter." Joseph is learning good things about his brothers. His little test is revealing that their hearts had, in fact, changed. And now their conscience has been pricked, and now there is regret and there is sorrow. And that's what God always wants. Pain to the body is like our conscience is to sin. And when our conscience is pricked, that is God working in our life. So he sends them back to the land, and he wants to have them bring back Benjamin this time. So Simeon becomes the hostage. And Simeon is kept there in Egypt. All the brothers go back. They take the grain. And quite a lengthy period of time goes by. In fact, they don't come back to Egypt again. They just leave Simeon there. They don't come back until they run out of provisions again. And a second time, they've got to go back. Now, Joseph had also done something just to sort of test them again. When he sent the grain, they had paid for the grain with silver, and he put the silver back in the grain. That scared them. That was probably one reason why they didn't want to come back a second time, because the money was sent back with them. So they finally, in desperation, have to go back again. They know they've got to bring Benjamin. They talk to their father long and hard, and he finally, reluctantly, agrees to let Benjamin go. But he says, "You take care of that boy. Don't you let anything happen to him." So they go back, and they bring back the silver that Joseph had placed in their bags. Plus, they bring back enough silver to buy another supply of grain. And back they go then to Egypt. Look over in chapter 43. We need to move through this fairly quickly. In chapter 43, down in verse 24. They come back, And Joseph this time is going to test them not with adversity, but with prosperity. And so he brings them to his mansion. It was probably the second finest palace in all of Egypt. And we've seen in archaeological sites the kinds of homes that the rulers of Egypt lived in. And so he brought them in, and they'd never seen such opulence and such riches in their life. Brought them into his home, into his palace. And it says in verse 24, the steward took the men into Joseph's house, and he gave them water to wash their feet, and he provided fodder for their donkeys. And they prepared their gifts for Joseph's arrival at noon because they had heard that they were to eat there. I mean, this overseer of Egypt was going to come, and they were going to have lunch in his house with him. And so they got gifts together to give him. They were bound to have been so confused by this treatment. And it says in verse 26, when Joseph came home, they presented to him the gifts they had brought into the house, and they bowed down before him onto the ground, and he asked them how many they were. And then they said, he asked them how they were, and then he said, how is your aged father that you told me about? Is he still living? They replied, your servant, our father, is still alive and well. And they bowed down, prostrating themselves before him. And as he looked about, he saw his brother Benjamin, his own mother's son. And he asked, is this your youngest brother, the one you told me about? And he said, God be gracious to you, my son. Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. And after he had washed his face, he came out and, controlling himself, said, serve the food. Now, he has one final test. Everything so far looks good, but he's not sure what their attitude is toward this youngest brother. He can tell already he's the favored brother just like he was. He has become his father's favorite. And Joseph knew all too well what kind of resentment that can cause when a parent favors one child over all the others. So he's going to do a little test to see if they still are as resentful towards Benjamin as they were towards him. Look in verse 32. It says, they served Joseph by himself, and the brothers by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because Egyptians could not eat with Hebrews, for that is detestable to Egyptians. The men had been seated before him in the order of their ages, from firstborn to the youngest, and they looked at each other in astonishment. Don't you know that they were just trying to figure this thing out? How could he know our birth order? And yet here they are, arranged chronologically in order. And they're amazed that they're here in his house in the first place, and now they're seated in this correct order. And it says, when the portions were served to them from Joseph's table, Benjamin's portion was five times as much as anyone else's. But it says, they feasted and drank freely with him. Now, any parent here who has more than one child knows that if you give one child five times more of something than any of your other children, there's going to be trouble. That's a sure way to cause a fight in a family. And yet, they feasted freely. There's no record of those brothers exhibiting resentment or jealousy or fussing or feuding or feeling hard done by. Little brother gets five times as much, and nobody says a word about it. Now, they spend this time with their brother, and Joseph loads them up with grain, and he releases Simeon, who had held hostage for all that time, and Benjamin goes off. They still have no idea who Joseph is. And as they leave, he has one final test. and this time in all the bags of grain, in his little brother's bag of grain, he places the silver cup that he'd been drinking from there in the palace, hides it in the grain, and lets them just get almost out of town, and then sends the Egyptian police after them. And they stop them. And that group of officers berates them and says, "How could you receive such gracious hospitality at the hand of the ruler of Egypt and then steal his silver cup right off his table?" And they said, "We did not do that. If anyone did that, let them be punished most severely." And so they said, "We're going to search your bags." So they started with the oldest brother. And one by one, they went through the bags. And you can see the relief as they get all the way to the end almost. And they say, "See, we didn't take your cup." Until they get to Benjamin's bag and they open it up. And there's the cup. These brothers were absolutely devastated. They had promised their father that they would take care of this brother and bring him back safely. And look what happens in chapter 44. Look down in verse 13. "At this they tore their clothes. Then they all loaded their donkeys and returned to the city." You know, they were only going to take Benjamin back, arrest him. The others could have gone. Not one of them went on. If Benjamin's going to be in trouble, we are all in trouble. So they all go back with Benjamin. And it says then that Joseph was going to keep him in prison, Benjamin, and he was going to send them back to their father. And Judah is the one who speaks up. Now, look at Judah, down in verse 18. "Then Judah went up to Joseph, and he said, 'Pardon your servant, my lord. Let me speak a word to my lord. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself. My lord, ask his servants, do you have a father or a brother?' And we answered, 'We have an aged father, and there is a young son born to him in his old age. His brother is dead, and he is the only one of his mother's sons left, and his father loves him.' Then you said to your servants, 'Bring him down to me so I can see him for myself.' And we said to my lord, 'The boy cannot leave his father. If he leaves him, the father will die.' But you told your servants, 'Unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you will not see my face again.' When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him what my lord has said. And then our father said, 'Go back and buy a little more food.' But we said, 'We cannot go down. Only if our youngest brother is with us will we go. We cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us.' Your servant, my father, said to us, 'You know that my wife bore me two sons. One of them went away from me, and I said, he has surely been torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. If you take this one from me too, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in misery. So now if the boy is not with us, when I go back to your servant, my father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring the gray head of our father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now then, please, let your servant remain here as my lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come on my father." Here's Judah. He says, "I'll take his place. I'll become the slave for the rest of my life. Only let my little brother go back. My poor old daddy just couldn't take it." It would be many years later that a descendant of Judah, one from the tribe of Judah, would come to this earth. And he would have you and me in mind. And he would make the very same offer. He'd say, "I'll take his place. I'll take her place in order that they can be set free and go be with my Heavenly Father." In the time that we have left, We know how the story ends. They all come back. He gives them the land of Goshen, the best pasture land in all of Egypt. And Joseph faithfully cares for his family. It describes how he made himself known. And that's such a beautiful story. When it says there in chapter 45, Joseph could no longer control himself before his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers, and he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer, because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." And when they had done so, he said, "I am your brother, Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead to save you." He would go on to say, "You intended it for evil, but God intended it for good." And he forgave them. He let it all go. No punishment. He would only do them good for the remaining years of their lives. Well, as we close, let me just leave you with three suggestions on forgiveness. If there is a root of bitterness in your heart toward anyone, I doubt that anyone here has been as wronged as Joseph was wronged in his life. The first step is to give up on any notion of retaliation. You know, it's easy sometimes to fantasize and wish bad things would happen and that someone would get their comeuppance and eventually that they would be shown up for the cad that they are. But Joseph let go of any hope of retaliation. Paul would later write in Romans chapter 12 and verse 19 of God, "Vengeance is mine. I will repay." And for the Christian who's been hurt, it is enough for us to know that no one ever gets away with anything. One day, every person will have to give an accounting before God, and God will set the records straight. And any vengeance that's to take place will take place at the hand of God. And we need to just trust God to do that. Secondly, Joseph did everything he could do to bring about reconciliation. Did you know forgiveness is a one-sided thing? Now, I can forgive someone at a distance, but reconciliation is two-sided. That means I involve the party. I do all I can to bring about unity between those people. And let me just say this, because sometimes people say, I just am scared to get close to that person again. They've hurt me so badly. Forgiveness and reconciliation do not necessarily mean that you trust that person again. There are some times when people have been hurt and they've been wronged, and I would counsel them, you need to forgive them, you need to make peace, but I wouldn't be around that person if I were you, because sometimes people are just not trustworthy. Scripture tells us, do not repay evil for evil. And the third thing, acknowledge the sovereignty of God. There are sometimes things that happen and we don't understand why they happen and they hurt us in the process, but possibly, just possibly, God has a reason. They meant it for evil. God meant it for good. Real maturity is when we can look back over our victories and our hurts and the mountains in our life and the valleys and see the hand of God in all of it. It'll only be when we get to heaven that we fully understand why these things have happened in our lives. But let's trust God. God has ways of bringing blessing out of burdens and trials. Tonight, we're going to close with an invitation song, and if there's anyone here that needs to ask for the prayers of brothers and sisters as you're going through a difficulty, if there's anyone here that has never yet taken that initial step of obedience, we would be delighted to assist you as you do that. If you need to come, we invite you to do it as we stand and sing.